WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for joining us. Money dictates so much of our lives, and it's definitely a big influence in campaigns and in politics. Much of this comes down to campaign funding and spending, which has really ramped up over the last decade, and it's having a huge impact on this election cycle. We are seeing a huge amount of spending on the governor's race and in the 8th congressional district race. We are seeing more money in some of the campaigns than we have ever seen before. And it's not just money from candidates themselves or from the two political parties, the two major political parties. There are all these third-party interests that raise huge sums of money and spend them mostly on negative campaign ads that add to the total. It's enough to make you think and wonder about the influence of money on our politics. Is it too much? Is it too unregulated? Is it not transparent enough? And what effect does it have on the decisions that people make on their ballots? That's where we want to continue the conversation here on Detroit Today. And we've got Simon Schuster, who is a senior politics reporter for M Live, here to talk about it. He has been tracking all of the money that is sloshing around in Michigan campaigns this cycle. Simon, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Stephen.
So let's start with the gubernatorial race. Governor Whitmer has raised a lot more than her opponent, Tudor Dixon, but in the last month, Dixon has kind of caught up. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say that that's pretty on track with what we've seen from recent campaign finance filings. It's important to note that, like, we don't see, essentially from a couple weeks after the primary until 10 days or so before the election, any sort of campaign finance information. So we just kind of got a lot of this stuff last Friday. And as a result, you know, we're sort of looking at this now at the tail end of the campaign, but she's really kept pace with Gretchen Whitmer. I think the big problem for her now is that although she's sort of kept pace with her fundraising now, as we're looking in the final chapter of the campaign, she only just has gotten this money to spend, whereas Governor Whitmer has been advertising. I'm sure any of your listeners who have been watching TV or cable news in the past few months have been seeing this steady stream of ads from Governor Whitmer and her allies. But Tudor Dixon, sort of the cavalry, has really only come in for her in the last hours here.
And that race, when we think about the totals in that race, again, the totals in the campaigns overall, I think, are stretching toward records. But let's talk about that governor's race and how much money is in it. Is this something we haven't really seen before?
You know, I don't know if we're going to get to the record amount of spending that we saw in the 2018 election, in fact. And that's largely because while Governor Whitmer has had such an unprecedented amount of fundraising, I believe, about $36 million since entering office in 2019, Dixon hasn't really sort of had the institutional support. I think it's important to remember that Bill Schuette was attorney general. He was an incumbent politician, whereas 18 months ago, Tudor Dixon was a commentator on sort of a fringe cable network, Real America's Voice. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have sort of this professional political apparatus built up. She didn't have fundraising consultants that, like, Governor Whitmer and a lot of institutional politicians do. And so there has been sort of this lag for her in fundraising. And so although Governor Whitmer has had this outsized fundraising acumen, they've not seen the same thing on the Republican side.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the other huge race where money is having a big influence, and that's the 8th Congressional District, where incumbent Democrat Alyssa Slotkin is facing off against Republican Tom Barrett, who is right now in the legislature. That is going to end up being one of the most expensive congressional races. Talk about why that race has attracted so much money and interest when we have other races that will also be close. Dan Kildee, for instance, in the new district that he's running in, also is in a tight race. What is it about this Slotkin Barrett race that is so interesting to the fundraisers?
Right. So while Alyssa Slotkin is the incumbent in the current 8th district, she's actually running in the new 7th.
That's right.
And Kildee is running in the new 8th. It's hard to keep all these lined up.
It's going to take me a couple of years to sort out the new numbers on these districts. That's right. That's
right. And seven, we won't even get started on state legislative districts in that regard.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, it's important to note that the 7th district between Alyssa Slotkin and Tom Barrett is not only the most expensive election in Michigan, it's one of the most expensive congressional races nationally. It's certainly the most expensive U.S. House race in Michigan's history. We've already seen something in the range of well above $30 million spent on advertising in this race. And Alyssa Slotkin has proven to be a prodigious fundraiser. She certainly has an advantage on Tom Barrett, but at the same time, you know, they're relatively matched in advertising spending, and that's in large part because a lot of these significant advertising spenders are outside forces. These are the House Majority PAC, DTRIP, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and its counterpart on the Republican side that are pouring money into these races. They're spending, you know, inordinate amounts of cash. And beyond just sort of the, you can see the national interest in this race and how important it is to people, because you see these national figures, some of them whom are mulling presidential bids, like Republican and former Vice President Mike Pence is coming to campaign for Tom Barrett on Friday. And then we saw Liz Cheney sort of making for strange bedfellows, campaigning for Alyssa Slotkin earlier this week. And so it really sort of shows this magnetic force that this race has brought. It has national significance. And that's really where we're at, I think, with campaign spending in the state, is that it's less about, in these congressional races, its significance for Michiganders, and much more so about control of Congress and the balance of power in Washington.
Yeah. I mean, if you put those two districts together, for instance, the 8th, the 7th and the new 8th, they're critical to who will control Congress in Washington. If Republicans win both of those, it makes it much harder for the Democrats to retain control. We're talking with Simon Schuster, who is a senior politics reporter for MLive, also former director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. We're talking about all the money that is flooding into campaigns and into candidacies as we get closer to November 8th and Election Day. I want to hear from you as well. What do you make of our campaign finance system here, which allows all of this money to be part of the process? Do you think we should have maybe a different way of dealing with all the money in politics? Should it be more transparent? Should we be able to know more about, especially these third-party groups, which we're going to talk about in a minute, that are raising money and spending on behalf of candidates or issues? Do you think there is just too much money sloshing around in our elections? And do you think that is a tool of unfairness, an influence of unfairness in the process? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Simon, before we get to our listeners, I do want to talk about this third-party influence, which we were talking about the other day here on the program when we were talking about ads and commercials. The number of groups that are interested in these races and the amount of money that they have is one of the things that's pushing these totals so high. Talk about these third-party groups and what role they're playing in this particular election.
Right. So when you look at the federal level, a lot of these outside spenders are people with, you know, particular interests, whether it be the environment, the Second Amendment rights, or, you know, any of these sort of hot button topics where control of Congress is really important to them. They come in and spend a significant amount of money. But one that I think is particularly important to point out in our state legislative races is that in the 2020 cycle, the largest source of dark money spending in our state legislative races was the parties themselves. They have administrative accounts, which are supposed to be for, you know, buying staplers and paper and paying office rent, these sorts of things. They can use these funds outside of the campaign finance system, accept corporate checks, unlimited contributions, and then turn around and run what we call issue ads, where they don't explicitly advocate for the candidate's election, but they either talk up how good the candidate is or predominantly attack their opponents, often using, you know, sort of less than savory messaging. And So these are particularly effective because of their unlimited amount of money that they can spend and raise. Similarly, I think the caucus PACs are really relevant in state legislative races because they sort of can spend unlimited amounts in the general election, though those donations are disclosed. But we're seeing sort of a centralization of political power here. It becomes less about local politics and more about national agendas and nationalization of our politics. And I think that it's, you know, a pertinent question for voters and listeners on this program that, you know, what effects does this have for our democracy? Does it become about these elected officials representing local interests, or does it become, you know, the role that these officials can have sort of in advancing more nationalized agendas? And I think that that does particularly really complex things to our democracy that may perhaps be troubling.
Yeah. The transparency there is also problematic. I see the names of these third party groups at the end of their ads. They often tell me absolutely nothing about who it is or what their agenda might be. I mean, they have very cryptic names, some of them, but beyond that, we don't really get to know who is behind these interests and who's funding them. I mean, the transparency level for this stuff, especially at this point, is pretty low.
Right. I mean, we have a political apparatus now that's so professionalized that sort of the business of erecting these financial vehicles and establishing them and making sure that they're opaque, that you don't know who's behind them, is really sort of streamlined. It can happen very quickly, often in short order before an election. The primary super PAC that is supporting Tudor Dixon, Michigan Families United, as I reported earlier in the cycle, although they've received a lot of money from moneyed sort of Republican interests, including the DeVos family, they've outspent her campaign, but we still don't know who created the super PAC and what sort of the motivation by it is. They invited Tudor Dixon to a policy forum. They filmed her speaking, her stump speech, and then used that to run ads. But the campaign and people who were even emceeing that event professed to know nothing about who's actually organizing the super PAC. Another issue here is disclosure. When you look at these dark money vehicles, these nonprofit organizations that fund these dark money organizations, when they first create themselves, if they establish in an election year, that means that we won't see their first tax return or Form 990, their financial disclosure, until generally November of the year after the election. And so voters have moved on. They lose interest in who's behind these dark money groups. And so any sort of pressure towards transparency fades away.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Simon Schuster about all the money in our elections as we get closer to Election Day next Tuesday. We'll get to you on the phones and on social. Next, we're going to talk a little more about some problems that have arisen in the campaigns this fall, and a story by Simon this morning about a challenge to Republican nominee Tudor Dixon for governor, and what that's about with money. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you think about all the money and all the ads that we are seeing in advance of next Tuesday. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 1019 WDET,
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 1019 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest is Simon Schuster. He is a senior politics reporter for MLive, formerly the director of the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. We're talking about all the money that is being spent in the campaigns in the run-up to next Tuesday's elections. How much do we know about the money that's being spent and the people who are spending it? Is it too much? Is it having an outsized influence on our politics? And are there things we can do to either get more of that money To be transparent, are there better ways for us to keep track of the ways in which this influences it? We want to get you guys going on the phones and on Twitter as well. Call and tell us what you make of our campaign finance system, what you make of all the money that is in our campaigns this fall. What changes would you make as well if you had the ability? 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work into the conversation. Big Neo on Twitter says, the current money in politics allows seats to be purchased in Congress and other areas. It is extremely important for the voters to educate themselves on the positions that the candidates take. Anka called actually with reference to our former conversation with Attorney General Dana Nessel. She says she called to say how much of a positive impact she feels that this administration, Governor Whitmer and General Nessel, have had on her life. She said they run professional operations, which she has seen personally. She said they advocate for trans people, which is very important for things like insurance mandates, allowing trans women to obtain homes and not or hormones and not be discriminated against. Thanks to both Big Neo and Anka for those comments. Let's go to the phones here. Arthur in Detroit, you're up first. Arthur, what's on your mind? Are you there, Arthur?
Oh, it's Hunter, actually.
Oh, Hunter. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I've called him before.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, there's so much to say here. Well, there's a few things about it that are tragic. One is that so much of the ads, the TV ads, are just, especially from the right wing, are just lies, which with no defamation suit you can file for them. And the other is that that money could be going to something else. It's all going into a few hands of the people who produce the commercials and the TV shows and the TV stations that run them.
Mm-hmm.
But there are millions of dollars going to this select few. And the solution for it is that at least make sure that one solution would be try to amend the Constitution so that the rights that like free speech rights only apply to natural persons, not to corporations, and make sure that there's full disclosure that if you contribute a bunch of money to a PAC or whatever, your name, because you're the person speaking, has to be known to the public so that they know who the liars are.
Yeah. Hunter, that's a really interesting set of ideas. Simon, the lies and other outlandish statements that are being made in these ads stand out to me this cycle as having gotten a lot worse than just 2 years ago. When we had the presidential election, I mean, some of the things that people are saying, the characterizations they're making of the candidates are stretching the bounds of, I think, a factual basis, and maybe across the line when you think about things like defamation or libel.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that it's important to sort of note that money in politics has become something of an arms race, right? Because Tudor Dixon, for example, had an unprecedented lack of money. She was silent on the airwaves from her own campaign until the past few weeks, which really has not happened in a gubernatorial election in decades. And this is important to note, because if you are not spending an inordinate amount of money, then there are allies on the airwaves for your opponent then that can run a total flotilla of negative ads that instead define you for people who otherwise may not know who you are. And so whether or not that's false or misrepresenting who you actually are as a person, or maybe accentuating your most controversial policy opinion, it becomes extremely difficult to then have to later on reintroduce yourself to the public and say, this is what I'm about, not this one bad thing. If you look at a super PAC who spent, I believe in excess of $20 million, I think about 28 in favor of Governor Whitmer, they have highlighted her stance on abortion. Now, Tudor Dixon wants to argue that this is not an issue that's relevant at all in the gubernatorial election, given the existence of Prop 3. But whether that's the case or not, this is the thing that a lot of voters are going to associate her with because of the amount of money that's spent. So if you are, you know, trying to be above the fray and say, you know, I don't need to spend tons and tons of money on ads to win an election, then that really creates that opening for outside groups or your opponent's campaign to sort of define you for them. And that's sort of the difficulty that we find in sort of this whole campaign finance situation.
And these third party ads are almost universally negative, at least in my experience this cycle. And they are the ones that are mischaracterizing candidates, really taking things out of context and saying things that in some cases I know not to be true. If you are a candidate, I'm not sure how you would compete with that kind of outside money. I mean, almost no candidate is going to be able to match what these third parties can do in terms of the fundraising and blanketing the airwaves.
Certainly. And so this has been great for campaigns, because that means that when they spend their money on advertising, they can introduce themselves to the public through their advertisements, talk about what they stand for, and have a really positive message, while these outside groups, you know, without any sort of necessarily coordination, but there's just sort of a mutual understanding, they can sling mud, disparage characters, and, like you said, create caricatures of their opponents in ways that the campaigns no longer have to. And so it's been really great for them in that regard. But of course, that means that you have to have allies that are willing to do that. Otherwise, it's up to you yourself. But I think that's really sort of gone to extremes, as you've noted, in this cycle, because so much money is flooding into our elections.
Yeah. Simon, I also want to talk about your story this morning about the Michigan Democratic Party filing a complaint against Tudor Dixon for the way that she has spent some of the money that she's raised. What's going on there?
Right. So this filing from the Michigan Democratic Party essentially accuses Tudor Dixon's campaign of spending $5,000 on designer clothes for their candidate and buying items. And these include a red Alexander McQueen dress, a Veronica Beard double-breasted jacket, very high-end items purchased from Neiman Marcus and another boutique in Grand Rapids. And you're not allowed to spend campaign funds on items or assets that are going to personally benefit you. Dixon's campaign has argued that these are for campaign purposes only, just to be worn on the trail. This is where things get a little bit murky, because Michigan's campaign finance law is full of vagaries and weird situations that we require the Department of State then to sort of issue guidance and rulings that say this is how you have to explicitly act in these situations. And so we don't have an explicit ruling on the use of campaign clothing, but at the federal level, this is explicitly barred. And so this is sort of where we get into difficulties. And it's not it's not to say that other campaigns have been squeaky clean in this regard. Gretchen Whitmer's campaign had to offload $3.5 million that she raised in excess of contribution limits when these sort of cursory recall efforts against her fizzled out. An allied group that helped her 2018 campaign also had to pay a major fine. So this is sort of what happens when you get into the minutiae of campaign finance, and it makes for very poor optics, I think, on Tudor Dixon's part, for better or worse, because these are sort of really extravagant purchases. These are not Old Navy dresses.
Right. I mean, I think that probably is the point of the complaint, right? That
just a
few days before the election, and, you know, this won't be resolved at least until after the election, you get a story out there about Tudor Dixon spending big money on clothes, but it's an important story, and it's one of those things that really highlights how intricate all of the things that deal with campaign finance are, how specific the rules are. All right, I want to go back to the phones here. Ali in Dearborn, we've got just a couple of minutes left, but go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick comment. I think should be no finance, no contributions allowed. I think there's a direct conflict of interest when that candidate is supposed to represent their constituents, but yet they get third party contributing millions of dollars that may have an opinion different from what they should be doing for the folks they represent. So that's why I feel it should be none.
So you know, Ali, the outcome you're after there, I think, makes a lot of sense. But, you know, we have a First Amendment to the Constitution, and it says that I'm supposed to be able to support my favored candidates, and that money is one of the ways I support that. Do you not believe that that's acceptable expression?
And the way I think about it, I think the answer to that is no, because we have such a big gap between folks who have money and folks who don't. And it goes back to my point of conflict of interest. Now you're representing those elite people who have the opportunity to contribute those big dollars, and you're not representing the boots on the ground. So that's why I would... You know, I feel it's a direct conflict of interest, and I think it should go away.
Right. Ali, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Simon, this whole question of you know, how we would reform this is about the First Amendment and the way that that we think of it. We've only got about a minute left, but I want to get you to respond.
Yeah, I think that campaign finance advocates now have increasingly looked to the Constitution if they want to create sort of the major paradigm shifting change that they're interested in. When you look at what Supreme Court rulings have done over the past 10 years, it's not only moved to say that, you know, money is speech and that you can't really regulate political speech to a really a significant degree, but that even more recently, that there have been rulings that say you can't try and chill anonymous speech. The idea that you could spend money anonymously to attempt to influence elections or educate the public. And so we see a Supreme Court that's gradually trying to widen this idea of speech and what can and cannot be regulated. So I think that if there's hope that advocates have for sort of more closely regulating the spending in our elections, that they have to increasingly look to constitutional change. But I don't think, given this sort of arms race that we're in, that there's much appetite among elected officials for this.
Yeah. Okay, Simon Schuster, always great to have you here. Thanks for coming by today.
Thanks so much, Stephen.
It's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to talk with Chi-Yen Julie Wong about her new book, Beautiful Country, and explore what it feels like to be an undocumented immigrant growing up here in America. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.